Nielsen ranked number one. Melissa in the Morning, WICC 600. Nielsen ranked most listened to morning show in Fairfield County. Melissa in the Morning, WICC 600. The latest update on coronavirus in Connecticut. It's Melissa in the Morning's conversation with Governor Ned Lamont. Now on WICC 600.
Good morning, Governor Lamont. Thanks for being here this morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Melissa.
I'm so glad that you're here. So, first of all, I'm just going to tout that I am following the rules, and I am currently broadcasting from my basement because I'm in quarantine. Not because I have COVID, but because I was in a hotspot state. So I wanted you to know that I am following the rules.
Well, if you have a little porch, you can be out there, too.
Unfortunately, I have to be directly connected to get the satellite. I have to literally have my Comrex machine directly into my Ethernet cord, into the modem. So it's a whole rigmarole. Thank God for our engineers. But I do go outside right after with my son. But I am broadcasting from home for 2 weeks because I follow the rules. So I thought you'd be really proud of me.
Good for you.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird challenge, but it's completely worth it. Obviously, despite having to pay money or anything like that, it's really just I think peace of mind for everybody. And I think it makes a lot of sense.
So. It's not only peace of mind. I think people are being careful and they're following the rules. You know why? Because they see that it's working,
mm-hmm.
and
yes.
they see compared to places where they're less likely to wear a mask or less likely to quarantine, where it's not working. So mm-hmm. thank you.
Yeah, no problem. And, actually, while you talk about that, that's the perfect way to launch into my first question for you. So you made a joint statement, with New York and New Jersey yesterday about continuing to ramp up testing, which I think is a great idea, especially as we're heading into the school year. Now, what about travel advisories? Because I know there have been questions about whether or not those would change since the CDC has recently adjusted its guidelines.
No, I think we're sticking to our travel advisory. People flying into our state from highly infected other states or other countries are a risk. That's why we're so careful at our universities, because they're coming from all over the globe. So I don't see that changing. The good news is that the number of states on our travel advisory or quarantine continues to go down as the rates go down. So, Maryland. And Delaware, states that were Rhode Island that were relatively close to us are now off the quarantine. By the way, if you have a cousin from Guam, I apologize because they were added to the list and they will have to quarantine.
Yes, I saw that. Yes. But it's interesting how that is just ever changing really, truly week to week. We always try to update that in our newscasts as well. So I appreciate those updates. Now, of course, we're going to talk about schools. That's been like the coverage this week, next week, all into when students do start their in-person classes, mostly in Fairfield County and New Haven County is on the 8th, right after Labor Day. First of all, let's talk about colleges, because UConn just less than a week has ramped up from, I think it was 7 or 9 cases to they're now at 68 this morning, which I know UConn's got thousands of students, so that may not seem like a lot. But it sounds like they are now going to keep one full dormitory in quarantine. My question to you is, do you worry? Are you worried that we're going to start to see the ramp up and it's going to come from our college campuses?
I think you're exactly right. K through 5, K through 8, we feel very confident on. You know who the cohort is. You know the kids come from a very, low infection area. High school, probably a little more likely hybrid, less likely to stay within their pod or their cohort. In college, you attract from a much bigger, wider group of folks, like I said, and they're more likely to travel around campus and not stay within a group. So if you want to know my level of anxiety, it's probably closest on the university. That's why you test before you get on the plane. You test when you get to campus. You quarantine for 2 weeks. We are being very strict there. And I hope it's good enough. We'll find out.
Do you have any updates on bars reopening? And the reason I ask that, I kind of jumped around a little bit there. But the reason I ask is, A, because we are always hearing from, obviously, bartenders. But also, one of the biggest concerns at college campuses, Governor, as you know, is that, look, students are going to drink. It's part of the experience. They are drinking. They're partying. That was the issue we saw in Danbury. We saw it in some of Fairfield County as well, and we had those upticks this summer. So if we can't even control towns and cities to not party with family, how do we really expect to do that with college campuses?
Well, one, by not opening up the bars and nightclubs and things like that. I talk to governors of Florida, Texas, and Arizona, where nobody enjoys a bar more than they do. And they just said this was what accelerated the contagion. And they did close them down soon after opening them when you saw what happened there. And, you know, in colleges, yeah, I like the party too. But in this case, party with a small group of friends who are part of your cohort. That's the safe way to do it.
We were just talking about bars not reopening for the foreseeable future, especially because that is where you'll find a lot of college students and with partying and everything. Now, Governor Lamont, you were talking about before how K through even 8, we could do the cohorting and we have a little bit more control over that age group. But I have to be honest, this week alone, I had 3 middle school teachers come on, Stamford, Fairfield, and Norwalk come on. All of them, without knowing each other at all, said the same thing, that they, of course, want to see their students. They'd like to be in a more normal atmosphere, but there's still so much uncertainty. None of them could tell me what cohorts they'd have. None of them could tell me what lunch looked like. You know, none of them could tell me if art classes were happening, things like that. And my question to you is, a lot of them worry that in about a month they're going to end up going back to virtual and they don't really have what they, not that they don't have the materials, but they've been prepping for being in person and doing hybrid models, that if we do revert back to online, you know, by October and we end up doing that the rest of the semester, did we do the best we could this summer to prep teachers properly and be realistic that in person may not last for very long?
Well, first of all, I'm awful glad that the nurses back in April and May didn't say, of course, I want to go see the patients in the emergency room, but I don't feel confident doing that right now. I'm really pleased the food service workers said, look, we can't get the grocery stores open for the next few weeks, but I hope we do it now. I mean, we have done everything we can going back now a couple of months, telling the schools, we will provide everything you need from a public health point of view, everything you need from a mask point of view, everything you need from a disinfectant point of view, and plexiglass, and all the things you may need to make sure that we can open schools as safely as possible. But you're right, Melissa, nothing's going to be 100%. Mm-hmm. And if we want to wait for 100%, where 100% of the people are on a vaccine that we absolutely know works, our kids are going to have a lost year of schooling. And right. And if we can get the schools open even for a couple of months, I think that would be just an enormous connection with your teachers and your peers. And then, but you're right. If I see the metrics going another direction, public health first, we'll go right to distance learning.
And it was interesting. Yesterday, I was on the phone with Griffin Health, and something really interesting came up. And it was about, obviously, flu season, because we're right on, you know, right in the beginning of that, starting soon. And interestingly enough, we found early on with COVID that some of the symptoms you'll have for COVID are very similar to flu. So I had asked the doctor this, and he couldn't really answer it because he's not a lawmaker. But I was saying, so right now, if I understand this correctly, for a cohort, say you've got a child who is showing symptoms of COVID, that classroom would essentially, you know, they're all there together, they would essentially go home, basically. How do we know that we don't have just a classroom full of flu people, flu infected students, I guess, and keeping people consistently in their classes? I know, obviously, testing, but testing still takes something like 3 to 5 days. So does that interrupt sort of the classroom in person
process?
Yeah,
Melissa, that's the right question. That's why people are a little more worried about November than they are September, because that's the beginning of the flu season. Flu resembles COVID. So I see that Massachusetts just said we're going to require a flu shot for everybody who wants to go into elementary school or K-5, something like that, just to prevent that type of anxiety or confusion, so that if somebody has flu-like symptoms, there's an even stronger presumption it's related to COVID and you know how to act immediately. I think that's the direction we ought to be looking at.
That was what I was going to ask, because I know that's been a topic of conversation a lot with the legislature, is figuring out how to get out of the grandfathering into no vaccine. So, like, are we possibly going to have to see a session about that? Because that's a big problem, I would think.
Yeah. We've got to figure that out. But as you know, we had less than 50% of our people take the flu vaccine when it was, voluntary. This year, it's a lot less because you're less likely to go see your doctor. And, right before COVID, we had thousands of protesters running around the Capitol saying, you can't make me vaccinate my kids. So we got to figure out the right balance here pretty fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I know you have to go, Governor, but I just wanted to ask one more thing. I know this morning you're assessing damage from yesterday's storm. Could you give us the latest on Eversource? Of course, we're keeping a close eye on the utilities. We know the hearings were going on this week. What is the latest on that with the Eversource investigation?
Well, first of all, with the investigation, we had our PURA, which is the regulatory hearing. And yesterday, the legislature's Energy Committee had a hearing, lots of public comment, and went all day long. And isn't it ironic that we had to interrupt the hearing on CTN so that I could give an update on where we are with the latest tropical storm and the latest outage, which obviously impacts electricity in a big way? I'd say that because this storm was smaller, just as intense, but not nearly as extensive, the greater Brantford area and East Haven and a few places hit pretty darn hard. We were able to get Eversource 400 crews out there, plus the tree crews. And manpower doesn't matter, though, unless you take care of the job. So I've got to see how much they've taken care of.
And I think my last question, Governor, is in regards to PURA. I would just like to know, only because I know Eversource and UI have been investigated before. We've seen they were investigated for Sandy and for Irene, but we really didn't see a lot of change. I know you've brought forth some ideas that you and Deep have been working on. Who's making sure that PURA is actually holding Eversource and UI's feet to the fire on this?
Marissa Gillette. Marissa was chief of staff to the Utility Commission down in Maryland. She's a hard-charging analytical regulator who runs PURA, the regulatory board. And you're right, we've done this before. We did it after Sandy. This time we're going to get it right, and we haven't gotten it right. So we're going to change the way we regulate the utilities and make sure they only get paid for performance.
Governor Ned Lamont, I so appreciate you giving us extra time this morning talking about things. But, I was gone. It was like 3 weeks since I've talked to you, so I had a lot to talk to you
about.
Where
have you been? I missed you.
I know. Well, I went on vacation, and that's why I'm in quarantine now. So I needed a break.
Melissa, thank you. It's great talking to you again.
Good morning, Congressman. So glad you could be here. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Welcome back from vacation.
Thank you. Appreciate it. So we have a few things I want to cover this morning, starting off with unemployment coverage. I know that FEMA just approved for Connecticut and 27 other states, I believe, the $300 stipend, which hopefully will start in the next few weeks. But just curious if there's any more movement in Washington for people who are out of work. I just learned, I think it was Thursday, that we had another million unemployment claims across the country for jobless claims, I should say. So any more relief coming our way?
Yeah, I think so, Melissa. I was down in D.C. last Saturday to vote on this postal service bill, and my sense from talking to people is that right after Labor Day, negotiations will start again between the leaders and the White House. And we're at a point now, and I don't need to tell your listeners this, we're at a point now where folks that are still not employed, and there's still a lot of them in our community, are starting to feel the pinch associated with the decline in the unemployment insurance that they were getting. And of course, for our businesses, those PPP loans, which were really lifesavers for a lot of small businesses, a lot of larger businesses too, but largely the small businesses, they've run out. So I think we're all ready to point point where it's gotten critical. And I have been urging the Speaker of the House to, you know, to not take time off from these negotiations. I mean, from my perspective, it feels to me like the White House has been unreasonable. But regardless, we need to keep negotiating because I think we're at a point now where we're getting towards the beginning of the month. People are going to need to make payments on their rent and on their mortgages. And, you know, now's the time. So I'm really hopeful that right after Labor Day, the Congress will get something done.
What is the latest on the Postal Service, as you mentioned it at the top of this?
Yeah, well, we spent a week really shining a very bright light on the changes that had been made at the post office. And, you know, people know what those were. There were a lot of these very large sorting machines removed from a number of facilities, and overtime pay was forbidden. And I think that was really important because at the end of the day, the Postmaster General said what I think was the reasonable position, which was, look, we do need to make changes at the post office. And that's absolutely right. You know, people are sending an awful lot less mail than they used to send, but you just don't do that. You don't start tinkering with the machine in the middle of a pandemic where people are relying on the post office more than ever for medicines in particular, but for even for things like food, and certainly right before we go into an election where millions and millions of Americans are going to vote absentee or by mail. That's just not the time to be sort of experimenting with new procedures and changing equipment. So I was very gratified that the Postmaster General reversed his stance on that. And I actually spent a lot of last week talking to postal officials here in our state and in our region. And, you know, after talking to them, I feel reasonably good. You never know, because, again, we've never seen the volume that we're going to see of posted, of mailed ballots. But I feel reasonably good that partly as a result of the spotlight we shone on it, the Postal Service will be able to handle the volume of election mail. And more importantly, you know, we talk about the election a lot, but Melissa, tens of millions of Americans, including all of the Americans that get their medicine through the VA, get their prescriptions through the mail. That's kind of life and death stuff.
Yes, absolutely. No, and I'm glad because I know last weekend there were movements happening here in Connecticut, obviously across the country. And I just think the Postal Service is one of those things that we expect. But, you know, until it's sort of brought to the forefront, we don't realize that, oh, hey, these are actually huge changes happening in Washington. It will affect, you know, your every day that you rely on your mail. And I think it was gratifying to see how many people put themselves out there to defend our postal services, which we so desperately need. So I'm glad to see some updates there. Talking to Congressman Jim Himes this morning. And Congressman Himes, of course, we need to touch on almost 3 months to the day after George Floyd died at the hands of a white officer. We see this shooting in Wisconsin of Jacob Blake. Luckily, he has survived miraculously. And I know that the investigation is ongoing, but from a lawmaker standpoint, this was something I kind of pressed Senator Blumenthal on yesterday during the show. But what is being done? I understand this idea of like a universal universal rules for all police departments. It's nearly impossible. You can't really tell every state and municipal, you know, police department to follow the same guidelines. But is there anything that we can do to make sure that maybe all trainings look the same or that we all are following some sort of protocols? Because at this point, I'm finding that Connecticut passed legislation for our reform and accountability. I honestly have not seen a lot of movement from other states. I may be completely wrong, but I'm just not seeing where we could be taking action after George Floyd. And now, boom, not even 3 months later, this happens to a 29-year-old. And I just am wondering what's being talked about in Washington to avoid this.
Yeah. Well, a couple things to say about that. First, you're absolutely right. You know, I'm getting the same sinking feeling in my gut, you know, given the proximity of this latest outrage to the George Floyd killing, the same sinking feeling I get around these school shootings. I mean, you remember there was a period there where it felt like there was a school shooting once a week, and these are just horrible acts of violence that our society shouldn't tolerate. And you're also right in saying, you know, the federal government is not going to take the lead on this because at the end of the day, our policies and procedures and training of our police, unless you're talking about the FBI, are really municipal concerns and state concerns. And so And you're absolutely right. You'll recall that after George Floyd, the House of Representatives did pass a bill, and Connecticut did as well. And I would tell you, look, we need to see this problem for what it is. And it's important to say, you know, the vast majority of police officers, and Americans know this, the vast majority of police officers are very competent professionals who take a lot of pride in their job and who do the right thing. But as we are seeing, there are just too many, you can call them whatever you want to call them, bad apples, exceptions to the rule, who do truly, truly horrible things. And so the challenge, of course, is making sure that those officers, like the officers that were involved in the killing of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud, Ahmaud Arbery wasn't police officers, but that they are never admitted to police forces, and that the training in the police departments is good. And, you know, specifically what can be done. There are a lot of things, Melissa, that can be done, and we don't have time to talk about all of them. But, you know, for example, there's no database of officers who have been dismissed from a police department for abuse of power. And
that's
therefore
crazy.
We see an officer get fired from one department and go a few towns over and get a new job. That's one thing. You know, general training, if you talk to police chiefs about this, you know, training can probably be better in terms of teaching de-escalation in tense situations as opposed to aggressive responses. So there's a lot of and, you know, I'm far from a law enforcement expert, but there's a lot of things that can be done to improve that training, to improve the cultures, and to make sure that those minority of officers who shouldn't be in uniform are never admitted or ultimately are removed from police departments.
So those are still being discussed in Washington.
Well, again, yes, of course they are. But this, you know, this is an area in which, you know, towns and cities and counties are going to need to take the lead, because they're the ones that control the policies around their police departments.
Congressman Jim Himes, we appreciate you taking the extra time to talk this morning about some really key stuff. So thank you so much, and we'll talk again next week.
Okay, thank you, Melissa.
And we're headed back to the kitchen at the Sheck House. Hey, Mom, how are you?
I'm good, honey. How are you?
I'm good. It's Cooking with Claude. We are back after a 2 or 3 week hiatus. I don't even know, but
I think it was only one.
No, well, we were gone last week, but then the week before we had the radiothon, so you didn't come
right.
on that day.
You're right.
Yeah. Oh, I know I'm right.
You're right.
I get that from Daddy. I know I'm
right. Learning.
Oh, man. Well, we're going to learn from you this morning. There are two recipes that I think they're simple. So this is a good one, guys. This is simple. This literally you could probably remember if you're listening in the car and you don't have your pad and paper out. Pad and paper. I always say that. Your pen and paper out. These are two very simple recipes. The first one, Mom, I think gets even little kids, like picky eaters like my son, to eat vegetables. So tell us about the cauliflower steaks.
Yeah, it was funny. This is how simple it is. Last night at like 8:30, Daddy says to me, well, send the picture of your cauliflower. And I'm like, it's sitting on the counter. And I'm like, oh, my God. Okay, guys.
Can you tell we're all in quarantine? Just so all the listeners, just so you know, Mom, Trusty was barking earlier this week when Chase's babysitter showed up, when Agnes showed up. He just starts barking, and he literally started barking about a minute before the governor came on, and I was like, this is working from home life, so it's totally cool. My mom's in quarantine,
so
too,
true.
So there you go.
So anyway, Daddy says, you know, you got to send Melissa a picture, and I'm like, well, I don't have a picture. I was going to make this for Sunday. And he goes, oh, you need a picture. So this is how easy it is. You take your head of cauliflower, just take all the greens off it, put it in the whole flour as it is, and just parboil it, steam it, really, not boil, just steam it for about, I would say, you know, 5 to 10 minutes, and maybe 5 minutes, and then just shut your stove off and let it sit in there, just to cool down a little bit. And then when you take it out.
Mother? Oh, no. Christian, is it me or is it her? Hello? Christian?
Am I gone?
No, you're not. You're there. There we go. Wait, where are you there, Mom?
I'm here.
Oh, okay. Christian, was that me? Did I drop out? Because maybe that's my problem. I don't know.
Hey, could be my problem.
Hey, we all got problems. Okay, so you take the cauliflower out after being steamed, and then what happens?
And then I cut it into, like, you know, around half-inch steaks. So you know, have the whole ball in front of you, and then, you know, you get a kind of a sharp knife, and you just cut through it and lay them flat. The end pieces end up being kind of crumbly, but, you know, you should get, like, 3 or 4, you know, nice steak, you know, cauliflower steaks. And then whether you use the minced garlic or whether you use fresh garlic, either is fine. And depending on how much you make, I'm making 2, so I used a full stick of butter. Melt it, add your garlic, and then you take your baster and you just baste and paint them with a little garlic, a little butter, and when they're all covered, you put them in the oven at 350, and you just, you know, you cook them ready to serve. So, like, I made mine yesterday, and they're good for tonight's dinner, because Amy Jo's coming home. So they're good for tonight's dinner. And then in the meantime, this is a nice mix with, if you're doing, like, hot dogs or burgers, or we happen to do, which Derek taught me, my son-in-law, was, I didn't really think about it, but it's so simple, is adding, like, blue cheese to your chopped meat or feta cheese or any kind of crumbled cheese, you know, whatever kind of cheese you want, as long as it's crumbled or shredded or something. So you can mix it in there nicely, put your burgers on, and serve it with the cauliflower. And it's kind of, you know, 10, 15 minutes all together, but it's, I mean, my family loves it.
Well, and it's just like kind of a take on two very simple foods, but I always call them making them gourmet. Maybe I'm just being a little dramatic, but to me, you know, I'm a foodie. If I could, I would eat out every night. I love food. I love eating out. I love having something that's not just the typical, okay, I'm going to heat up a bag of green beans and I'm going to put a piece of chicken in the, like, you want to have good food, healthy food, but you want to also satisfy your taste buds. And to me, I love vegetables, but for a lot of people, they are not appetizing, but the cauliflower is so divine. It's so good when you make them into steaks.
And that's because with baking it, the butter bakes in it, the garlic bakes in it, it gets a golden brown instead of your, you know, unless, you know, you then mix it with just plain olive oil or something. But, you know, it just gives a different flavor, and it comes out, you know, golden brown with a, you know, with, nobody could go wrong with garlic. You can never get enough garlic, and you can't get enough butter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really good. And then my mom kind of snuck her second recipe in there, which is taking something as simple as burgers and making them gourmet, which for a long time, just because I'm married to the guy she mentioned, Derek, he always infuses our burgers. He'll go and get, you know, bacon bits and he'll throw it in. He'll get cheddar cheese and throw it. He loves to infuse our burgers, and we eat burgers a lot just because we like to eat protein.
But it makes such a difference. Like yesterday when I picked up the burgers at the store, the ground beef, I was like, oh my God, I gotta go back and get the blue cheese, and Daddy likes it with the feta cheese. And then I was thinking, oh, I should put the Parmesan, like do some Parmesan cheese. And I'm like, okay, just take it easy, you know. One's
but
good
it's,
enough.
We it's
just
true, though. And
one. Don't have to have 16 burgers with 4 of each kind. But it's just so good. So we've done them with feta, and we've done them with the blue cheese, which Derek does. But, that's the only way we can eat them now.
Yeah, we've done it with jalapenos. We've put onions
in
them. We've
great,
put
gotta go nuts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I know. But there's so many different ways. And I have to say, the reason we're bringing this up to all of you guys is we used to buy our burgers infused. So like if you go to Whole Foods, they'll have their like bacon cheddar cheeseburgers or whatever. And people feel like, oh, yeah, this is great. What a great deal. No, you would save so much more money if you just make them yourself. If you just get good ground beef and you add those ingredients. Just take the extra 5 minutes if you want to cut up things
That's
like
it.
Jalapenos or something.
Oh, because we used to do that when you kids were smaller, but
right.
Like, it's just so simple, you know, I mean, it's just so simple to do. I mean, it takes you, you know, 5 minutes to throw it all together and mix it all together. And if you have that old Tupperware piece that, you know, they sold 30 years ago, you can make the perfect burger. If not, make them with your hands. It's okay if they're a little crooked.
Yeah, do the Italian way and just make it with your hands. That's what you should be doing. Mom, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
I can hardly hear you.
Oh, thanks, Mom. You're done. You're good. I love you.
Oh, I love you, too. Say hi to Trustmire for me.
I will. He came on right before your segment because I said granddog's coming on, and he jumped up. His ears perked up.
I know.
He comes.
I thought your stories today was great, but I know you have to go because I'm cut.
It's okay, Mom. You're not cut. You're wonderful. I have to go.
I love you.
All right. I love you, too.